Good morning. Our first case is by speakerphone. Are we hooked up?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Why don't each person identify yourself so we know who's out there?
Jerry Flynn, represent Mr. Gardner.
Okay.
Attorney Clark Holsinger, and I represent Tiana Dockby.
Okay.
David Nozick, I'm an assistant U.S. attorney, and I represent the government.
Okay, good. Well, we can hear you well, and I assume you can hear each other okay.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move to the first case then. First case is the United States versus Tiana Dockby et al. And I assume, Mr. Flynn, you first up?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, why don't you proceed?
May it please the court. Mr. Gardner was convicted of one count of possession with the intent to distribute 50 or more grams of crack cocaine and in another count of possession of marijuana. Prior to sentencing, the government filed a notice pursuant to 21 U.S.C. 851 to increase Mr. Gardner's sentence to a mandatory minimum of life imprisonment based upon two prior felony convictions from the state of Illinois for possession of a controlled substance. Without any discretion at sentencing, the district court was obligated to sentence Mr. Gardner to life imprisonment. On appeal, Mr. Gardner raised four issues. The first issue I would like to address with the court is whether the district court abused its discretion and violated the rule of completeness by not allowing Mr. Gardner to cross-examine a Gary police officer named Officer Jenks after the government introduced portions of Mr. Gardner's oral statement on direct examination by Officer Jenks. Specifically, with regard to the rule of completeness, it is really codified in Federal Rule of Evidence 106, which basically holds that if an adverse party, or if a party introduces part of a written or recorded statement, the adverse party is entitled to introduce the other portions of the statement if it should be considered contemporaneously with the portion introduced by the other party. In this particular case, it was an oral statement by Mr. Gardner, and that has been, through case law, incorporated into Federal Rule of Evidence 611A. Therefore, oral statements are also embodied within the idea of the rule of completeness. And the basic concept is if the statement is part and parcel of the statement, which in this case was introduced by the government, then in fairness, the other part of the statement should be admitted. Specifically, the government introduced into evidence a statement by Mr. Gardner that he had smoked marijuana in a vehicle, which was the subject of the traffic stop in this particular case, when also Mr. Gardner informed the police officer that he had denied knowledge of a substantial amount of crack cocaine, which formed the basis of his conviction in count one. He had denied that to the police officer.
Now, you want that in? Of course, he wasn't going to testify, so that was one way of getting his denial in. Is that your theory?
That is correct. And in most cases, Your Honor, he would not be permitted to introduce this type of testimony without testifying. But once the government introduced a portion of his statement, thereby the fact that he had smoked marijuana in that vehicle, he was then entitled to introduce his denial of the crack cocaine.
Now, how would that have been important,
and we rely upon United States versus Haddad, which, quite frankly, is almost indistinguishable from the facts of this particular case. In Haddad, the appellant was convicted of being a felon in possession of a firearm. He had provided a statement to law enforcement that he had knowledge of marijuana that had been found under his bed in an apartment that he had co-tenancy with a girlfriend. However, he denied that the gun was also found under the bed, and he denied knowledge of that gun.
But the difference in Haddad is that they were really in the same place, whereas here, first of all, the district court also restricts what the government could do with this cocaine evidence, but the jury wouldn't have had any reason to worry about cocaine in the car just because Mr. Gardner admitted that he was smoking marijuana. It was in a different location. It was stuffed down between the console. I don't see that on an abuse of discretion review there is any abuse of discretion. And furthermore, even if it were a mistake, I'm not sure where you could show that the error made a difference, why this wouldn't be harmless error.
Actually, Your Honor, it is significant. It was found actually closer, Mr. Gardner would argue, to what was found in the Haddad case.
But that's what was found. The admission here is I was smoking. He could have been sitting there. I mean, the jury doesn't know anything locationally from the comment about smoking.
No, but they do know that marijuana was found in the cup holder of the center console and that crack cocaine was found in a very close proximity between the passenger seat and the center console.
But the knowledge of where the marijuana was didn't come from this statement. His statement was, I was smoking.
But it certainly could be inferred, Your Honor, that since that was the only marijuana found in the car and that he admitted to smoking it on that day, that he possessed the marijuana. That's a very easy conclusion for the jury to make. And the reason
But it's more steps away than Haddad.
In Haddad, they found that it was harmless because he was allowed to introduce the testimony of his girlfriend and basically get his theory in through her. In this case, the girlfriend was a co-defendant, and Mr. Gardner was not permitted to introduce the same theory, and so he was restricted even more than in the Dodd case. And I believe at this point I'm close to my 5 minutes. I'd like.
Yeah, your yellow light just went on, so you can reserve the rest if you like. Okay. Mr. Holsinger?
Yes, Your Honor. Clark Holsinger for Tiana Doxy. Tiana Doxy was convicted of two counts here. One for possession with the intent to distribute a controlled substance, and count two, possession of marijuana. And she was sentenced to 151 months. On appeal, we've raised one issue regarding whether the purpose of the initial stop was concluded by the time the vehicle was stopped a second time on the suspicion of marijuana by one of the two officers present.
Mr. Holsinger, the district court thought it didn't really matter if this was one stop that got lengthened because of the officer detecting the odor of marijuana or whether one stop finished and then they effectuated a second stop because the officer smelled the marijuana. Either way, the smelling of the marijuana provided ample cause to stop the vehicle.
Yes, Your Honor. That's, you know, what the district court said. And with respect to Judge Moody, I think the important thing is that Officer Boldy, who's the officer that went to the window that was opened and was closer to that location, to the interior of the vehicle, and did not smell the marijuana, said this about the stop at page 37 of the suppression hearing cross-examination by Mr. Tavitas. And just for clarification, after you had seen the registration on the windshield, as well as checking Ms. Doxy's driver's license and found it was okay, you basically said they were free to go. Correct. I was satisfied with what I was doing. The registration and the window tint were the two things that were the cause of the initial stop. Officer Boldy did not, and I misstated this in my reply brief, issue any citations at that point in time. In fact, he was letting them go without issuing the citation. When he had done that, and the vehicle, by Officer Boldy's testimony, was that it was put in gear. By Officer Sanders, it was put in gear and started to move. Boldy then stopped the vehicle at that point a second time. And the reason it continues to get further importance here is that Boldy says at this point Sanders then gets him out of the vehicle, but Sanders refers to a conversation and that he has with Officer Boldy at the rear of the vehicle, and this is at page 52 of the suppression hearing. He says, I conferred with Officer Boldy at this time and asked him if he smelled marijuana, and I don't think he did.
I don't understand why it's against the laws of physics that one person might notice an odor and another person doesn't notice that odor. The district court makes a credibility finding that that's precisely what happened, that Officer Sanders detected it. Maybe Officer Sanders is more familiar with it. Maybe Officer Boldy had a cold that day. I mean, there are all number of reasons why that easily could happen. And once you get the district court's fact-finding, you've got a pretty hard job to change things.
Well, with respect on that, again, you know, even Officer Boldy testified that he was the closer of the two. Officer Sanders is back behind the rear door of this SUV, and when they have this conversation, they, you know, there's two different opinions as to whether they're smelling marijuana. The vehicle, the initial stop has been concluded by Officer Boldy, and they can't agree on this marijuana, and it becomes kind of like a hunch. Even the cases that the government cited and the defense cited, marijuana is never the sole articulated reason for the stop. And it's just kind of, it falls into that category these cases refer to as to a hunch. And there's a hunch whether there's a smell of marijuana. In the same respect.
Well, there's not a hunt. I mean, the district court finds that Officer Sanders smelled the marijuana. He doesn't say Officer Sanders had a hunch that there might be marijuana in the car. He smelled what's actually a fairly distinctive odor. And unless you say that finding is clearly erroneous, and I'm not sure how you could, because it's based on credibility, then it's more than a hunch.
Well, I think when you combine the two officers' statements, I don't think it raises to that hunch, and I think that's where the error from the court comes. You remember Sanders testified merely that he believed the window was cracked on the passenger side, but he doesn't, you know, as to these suspicions as to where the marijuana, whether it comes from inside the car or out, the same logic as to whether Boldy had a cough or cold that day apply. And I think what we get into here is a second stop that's based on nothing but that hunt. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. We'll go to the other side. Mr. Nosek?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. The government is of the position that let's deal with the rule of completeness issue first. Mr. Flynn has laid out correctly in his brief the test to be applied, which is Velasco, and the government and Mr. Flynn agree that in general, if there's no rule of completeness issue, that it would be an inadmissible self-serving hearsay for the defendant to enter his own exculpatory statement. So then the question becomes, applying Velasco, is this a statement that under the rule of completeness and under fairness, the court should have admitted? And the government's position is, of course, no, that there's really, that it fails all four prongs. The statement doesn't explain the admitted evidence. Bear in mind, the statement that he wanted to come in is just a general denial. So no point does that explain the admitted evidence that he'd been smoking marijuana that day and that he lived with Ms. Gardner and they co-owned the Lincoln Navigator. The general denial doesn't place the admitted evidence into context. Admitting it doesn't avoid misleading the trier of fact. Bear in mind, it's a general denial, and the jury could assume that he's denying knowledge or possession of the crack cocaine since he is proceeding to trial. And finally, the fourth prong is, would admitting it ensure a fair and impartial understanding of all the evidence? And the government's position is, of course, on that one, no. Mr. Flynn relies on Haddad, and Judge Wood, respectfully, you made all the points that the government was going to make as far as distinguishing Haddad. Mr. Flynn thinks that it's exactly on point. However, if you look at the statement, it wasn't that marijuana in the center console is mine. It was, I was smoking marijuana in the Lincoln Navigator that day. And bear in mind, the facts are that when Officer Sanders is looking in the passenger side, he sees marijuana residue on Mr. Gardner while Mr. Gardner is wiping it off. So it's not necessarily the case that he's talking about the marijuana found in the cup holder. The second point, and Judge Wood, you also made this, is whereas in Haddad, they're right next to each other under the bed, and you can't really see the gun without seeing the narcotics and vice versa. here that's just not the case. While they're both in the passenger compartment, one is in the center console, that's the marijuana, whereas the crack is in a bag tucked down, the evidence was, in between the center console and the seat. So it's not the case that if you know of one, you necessarily know of the other. And finally, the government's position is if it was error to keep it out, it would, of course, be harmless error. Mr. Flynn said, you know, since his client didn't testify, he could never get in that fact. But it's just a general denial. And, of course, he argued in closing argument that the defendant had no knowledge or possession of the crack cocaine.
Well, do you agree that the police officer could have been asked a question in cross-examination that would have said, did you ask Mr. Gardner whether the cocaine belonged to him? Could he have been asked that question?
Well, that's an interesting question, Your Honor. The government initially, and sort of the history's a little unusual, the government initially had filed a motion to keep out the exculpatory parts of the statement as self-serving.
That doesn't call for his answer. It asked whether a question was asked of Mr. Gardner.
Yes, Judge, that question could have been raised. I know the court had some prudent concerns, and to be candid, you know, I have the utmost respect for Judge Moody, but the government is not of the position that called for Bruton or was a Bruton issue. So in general, the question could have been posed without an objection. Yes, although, you know, if once you're going one step further, then we would have stepped into the issue that we had.
Right. But so you don't take that final step, but that's one of the ways a defense lawyer would try to get around this objection that it's not admissible under the rule of completeness. He could just ask the question whether the defendant was asked if he owned that cocaine, and the officer would, I would assume, would answer no, and then you can argue that to the jury. Well, I never asked him if it was his cocaine.
Yes, Your Honor.
But that was never asked.
That was never asked, Your Honor. I believe that the court had some concerns about that he voiced on the record about the witness from previous testimony in front of this judge. In other cases, he thought the witness sort of ran on the lawyers and sort of stated what he wanted. So he was very concerned, Judge Moody, about Bruton, and sort of very, you know, limited, gave us the exact three questions we could ask, and those were the three questions that we did ask. I believe he was worried that this witness was going to run and sort of give more that was asked and then sort of step into Bruton issues. Regarding the stop, I'm so sorry. I have the do not disturb on. I'm so sorry. Regarding the... I'm sorry about that, Judge. I pressed the do not disturb button. Regarding the stop, there is the government's position is the court is absolutely correct that it does not matter if it was one stop or two. The government's position is it was really one stop. I mean, maybe she put the car into drive and might have gone an inch or two, but certainly it didn't go away. But that's really sort of getting into semantics because, as Judge Wood pointed out and the government argues, of course, it's the case that once Officer Sanders detects the strong odor of marijuana, he has probable cause or reasonable suspicion to stop the car. So, you know, Judge Moody rules whether it's a continuation of the original stop or a new stop is really not material. Either way, Officer Sanders' observation of the smell of what he believed, based upon his experience, to be burning marijuana gave him reasonable suspicion to stop the vehicle and to investigate further. Judge, I believe that... That's incontrovertible. That, you know, certainly he had probable, whether it's a first stop or a second stop, he had reasonable suspicion to either keep it remain stopped or to stop it again. Thank you.
Okay, did that complete your statement?
It does.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Flynn?
Yes, Your Honor.
You got two minutes, Mr. Flynn.
The rule of completeness. It's important for the court to understand that by not allowing Mr. Gardner to testify, to deny that he had knowledge of the crack cocaine, but also by allowing
nobody denied him the right to testify.
Well, excuse me,
he wants to get this statement in without testifying.
Deny the right to introduce that statement, though, by not allowing him to introduce that statement, the jury was allowed to infer that he did not deny it, and that is very important because that was what this whole case is about. Who possessed the crack cocaine. This is essential to the case. Also, I would ask the court to again consider this is a front seat of a vehicle. The distance between that marijuana and that crack cocaine was inches, probably less than the contraband in Haddad. Further, in Haddad, that dealt with a firearm and marijuana. In this case, it dealt with two controlled substances, making the link even stronger for the jury to infer that crack cocaine was linked to Mr. Gardner. Finally, the district court would not allow Mr. Gardner's lawyer to ask any questions about the crack cocaine, to include the example provided by the court. The district court was very concerned about Bruton, and if you look at the transcript, clearly disallowed that lawyer from asking what would have been an appropriate question that was hypothesized by the court in an earlier argument in this case. Moving on to the stop, which I did not address initially, it's important to understand that the inconsistencies between Officer Boldy and Officer Sanders are dramatic and extensive, to the point where you dramatically question whether Officer Sanders was telling the truth. And really, that's what the standard is. If the district court believes that, has a firm conviction that there was that the district court credited testimony that was unbelievable as a matter of law, then clearly you can find that there was clear error. The fact that Officer Boldy did not smell the marijuana is unbelievable. He had his nose literally in the front of the vehicle. He was talking directly to the driver. He was much, much closer than Officer Sanders. And as a result, that by itself creates real doubt, but there are numerous other inconsistencies between the two. When you look at them cumulatively, you clearly come to the firm belief that Officer Sanders was simply not telling the truth. And the government has conceded, and everyone agrees, that the only basis for them to continue to detain that vehicle was his smelling of that, or alleged smelling of that marijuana.
Okay, your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Mr. Hassinger?
Yes, just briefly, you know, with what Mr. Flynn has covered there regarding that stop and Officer Sanders' testimony, I think that really gets pointed out in the fact that they can't even agree about what Boldy and Sanders, what Sanders does next, and this conversation that took place at the rear of the vehicle. What happens with Sanders' testimony is so inconsistent with Boldy's that there isn't a reasonable suspicion for the second stop and the search of the vehicle. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. This case will be taken under advisement. Mr. Hassinger, I understand you were court-appointed. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, well, we appreciate your taking the assignment and your good work for your client.
Thank you.
Okay, this case will be taken under advisement.